This is Climate Talk Uganda. I'm Josephine Karunji, and I'm trying to get today's guest on the phone.
Hello?
Hi, Agnes.
Yes, dear.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you? Am I clear here?
Yes, you're very, very clear. It's so good to hear you. Agnes Chirabo is one of a kind. She's funny, she's compelling to listen to. A former actress and dancer who is now the executive director of the Food Rights Alliance. She is a seasoned food and agriculture policy analyst with over 15 years' experience advancing policy, legal and practice reforms in agriculture and food governance that promote and protect people's rights to adequate food and that uphold people's dignity. We had a great chat about how climate change plays into that work in June this year, which you'll hear in a minute. But first, I caught up with Agnes yesterday. Along with 5,000 other delegates, she was at the Africa Food Systems Forum in Kigali, Rwanda. I asked Agnes what she thinks of the climate change discussion there.
Of course, climate change, I'm saddened a bit that still climate change here in Kigali is largely being discussed in Africa from a problem approach, which I think makes Africa very vulnerable and makes us very poor negotiators on how best to deal with this issue of climate change, which I believe it has also created many opportunities for others depending on how they have decided to look at it.
So that disappointment that you're expressing now, listening to the conversations around climate change, is similar to the disappointment you expressed in our last conversation around how we are complainers. What things are coming out of that conversation as you were listening?
It is about how do we invest, how do we innovate, how do we think about scaling up technologies to see that food is produced in the shortest time possible and food is handled in the shortest time possible, because by and large, in many African countries, it is not that people are not producing, but now they have produced, and because of climate change, we are quickly getting exposed to the issues of food safety, because again, the foods cannot dry. They no longer have the long period of time to dry and things like that. So you see a space of exchange of ideas, but like I have said, I see some parties on the other side looking at it as a challenge, ignoring the fact that the people they are having conversations with, what seems to be problems as in regard to climate change, are actually great opportunities that Africa has to harness.
So when I spoke to Agnes in June, this idea of climate change as an opportunity came up as a consistent theme, and we'll get back to it in a second, but I was really intrigued by how she got from dance and drama into advocacy. It's a story that has its roots in a moment of intense personal reflection.
So I started my career looking at the issues of farmers' rights, and that is not good for the farmers because the organization I was working with was improving livelihoods of farmers, I was so much of farmers. Until one day, when I did my first campaign, it was about the maize campaign in 2007, when the prices of maize dropped to around 50 shillings per kilogram, and I was traversing the corridors of parliament, engaging parliamentarians, and then one parliamentarian found me in the corridors crossing from the, is it A block to the B block of parliament, and laughed at me. Said, look at this young girl. I know you're here to talk about farmers, but do you know that farmers at this time, they have already had their meal? And I'm sure you've not had a meal. But you're here, you know, walking in. Leave those people alone. There is no country that has developed with smallholder farmers. It touched me greatly. And, you know, I was like, okay, indeed I had not had a meal. So I realized that continuing to talk about farmers, even the children of farmers do not want to associate with farmers. They don't want to associate with their background, but they're the ones in the decision-making tables. So that year, I shifted from talking about farmers and started talking about food. I started talking about hunger. I started talking about malnutrition. Because I knew that even those that sit on the tables, they eat.
They need food.
They need food.
They might not appreciate who is putting the food on the table.
Yes.
But the smallholder farm.
Yes. And I started schooling myself around food. And I'm still a student.
Was a changing climate an issue for the farmers?
Of course,
when
yes.
You engaged with them?
Of course, yes. They did. They did. 2011, we are talking about how many years? 13 years. And the farmers were marrying the two.
What were they saying?
They were saying, we used to predict when we could plant. We cannot predict anymore. And unfortunately, they said they were being misled by the meteorology. Because meteorology would come and say, please, there's going to be an El Nino, whatever the word is. And they wait for that too much. For the farmers, they don't understand the terms. For the farmers, they said, there's going to be too much rain. And there is too less rain. They're told, this rain that you're seeing is just dramatic. It's not going to leave. Don't plant. You're going to lose your seed. So they listen to the meteorology message. And unfortunately, the rains are longer than they were. So they were living in a confusion. And they continue living in a confusion. Actually, my own mother told me, she loves listening to meteorology. Said, I love listening to those messages from government. For her, everything from radio is from government. Said, I want the weather messages from government. And then I ask her why. Because I do contrary. That's what she told me. Because I do contrary. When they said don't plant, I wake up very early in the morning and plant. And she, according to her, my mother is going to be 70 next month. According to her, she said, I have never gotten it wrong. But my mother, just like the farmers that I met in one big batch, I continued meeting farmers even yesterday, I was with farmers. My mother, with the farmers, they agree on one thing. This is the dilemma of climate change and what the lives that the farmers are living in this country may, I don't know elsewhere. Is that the cost of losing a seed is much cheaper than losing a season.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you listen to the meteorology and they say don't plant, or even if you've not listened and you think these rains are not the right rains, I shouldn't plant, to your surprise, your colleagues in the community harvest while you're looking. So to them, you rather lose the seed if the rains do not work than watching while your colleagues are harvesting. So they were talking about the changes, the unpredictable changes, the unpredictable seasons, actually they were saying, the unpredictable seasons. And to them that time, it was about unpredictable in terms of the rains coming. And the story has gradually changed beyond that.
Since 2011.
Because then it was about the rains coming.
What
but
is it now?
It is about the rain coming all the time. Because then they knew that the rains would come in March. Then we plant. And in June, we harvest and dry our harvests. And then clean our gardens, July and August. And then in September, we plant again. Now they are living in a terrible dilemma. The harvesting time, the rains happen through the night. And you know, our farming communities and the infrastructure they have on
post-harvest
handling.
Yes.
So now the rains are giving them trouble. While they thought that we'd rather lose a seed. But don't lose a season. But now, the dilemma is...
Everything.
Everything.
This reality that you've been painting of your mother and the seasons and the changes and so on, when you're interfacing with other farmers across the country, and I'm assuming this is across the country,
yes,
right? Is it the same?
It is actually the same. This year has been a very busy year. The way I feel it is like I'm in November. I'm surprised that I'm in June, in the month of legends.
I know what you're talking about.
No,
there's a legend next to me.
No, Josephine, legends are born in June, and we are born in June. It is just June, but I have been in the communities more intensive this year than the past couple of years. I've been in Kabale, I have been in Ibare, I have been in Karamoja, I have been in Mbomende, I have been in Acholi, yesterday I was in part of Bunyoro, Chidiandongo. I have been at the lakeshores in Katosi and those other islands. I have been there more fondly this year.
What are you seeing?
What I'm seeing is confusion. You cannot actually know who has the right message to give who. Actually, it is a very big risk to pretend to give a climate change message now, because you're bound to be cast or quoted. It's a dilemma. I have told you, early in the year, I saw maize in Masaka, Kalisizo, people abandoning maize in their compounds. They don't know what to do with it. You know, you have just put it out, and then the dramatic rains happen. And this smallholder farmer has a lot of work. This woman, Josephine, are you aware that the average age of a farmer is 50? And 70% of those are women.
Yeah.
The younger people have moved on. The younger people can't be part of this drama. It only takes the courageous people. And you know, the most courageous people are women. It can only take... You look at what the women are going through. They can't be away. They cannot know that today they are going to put out their produce, and even tomorrow. So even taking them away from their homes for a meeting, a community meeting, is a big burden. The rains happen anyhow. They don't know when to plant. They are those that planted. They have lost. The crop has failed. I have seen farmers, Josephine, do you know your maize crop failing at flowering? This is where the whole hope and motivation of a farmer is. And you go through the whole plantation when the maize crop has failed at flowering. They don't know what to do with it. These farmers have not lost that crop, Josephine. They have lost the school fees of their children. They have lost their dignity. They have lost themselves. And if they are not living in a natural environment, we are going to start seeing mental illness leaving the city centers and aggressively getting into the rural areas. Well, you know, you lost your livelihood this season. You've lost your livelihood the next season.
Agnes, you're painting a very bleak, daunting, scary picture, and it is the reality that you're seeing on the ground. Are there any, what are these women, these smallholder farmers, these men, what are they doing to help themselves? Is there any adaptation that you're seeing?
They are diversifying, and for me that is where my worry is. When I start seeing people planting a lot of timber trees, I get a bit worried. Because we have to eat. And to start with, both of us in Kampala, in the urban areas, we have several options to eat. Somehow food finds its way to Kalere or to Nakasero market, regardless of where it has come from. All what you need to do is to work and earn and buy it. But those people can only eat if the food system is strong. So if the men are converting the land into timber,
You say the men?
Yes, it is. They are the owners of the land.
The
My dear, you as a woman, to plant timber on somebody's land, you know, I don't know, maybe among the Baganda, why did they call the women Ibachala? Why do people think we are visitors? They are never...
had never thought about it like that.
That we come to Kuchala, we have a chala. They are never confident that that is where we have come. We have come to live, and we shall always be there. So you can be allowed to plant crops that can be forgotten very easily. So the owners of the lands are making some investment decisions by the ages of them. Farmers are investors. And they make investment decisions, and carefully thought through investment decisions, although not written or documented, and we think that they don't make investment decisions. So I'm seeing gradually moving away from the food crops to other crops, trees, to coffee.
That's not such a bad thing, Agnes, is it?
It shouldn't be a bad thing. I would be happy. But also we have studies that indicate that the money that is yielded from agriculture among the farmers, not even 30% is repatriated back into the household food security. After selling, people think of using the money for things that are far away from food. By the way, when we are having these conversations on climate change, we need to tell the world that if there is a world that is still the Garden of Eden to those that believe in the Bible, it is Uganda, with or without climate change. Uganda is still privileged to prevail and produce and give the region, if not all the rest of Africa, the food we have. And that is why FRA insists that whether we have dramatic weather conditions and all these climate change and all these realities we are seeing, if you look and try to interrogate Josephine, we only need to clean up the governance systems. We need to align our investments as a country.
You were speaking about the privilege we have as Ugandans in still being able to produce regardless of, you know, all of the changes that we are seeing in our climate. What should we do to protect that privilege, thinking at a policy level?
You see, when you look at the National Development Plan 3 and some of the subsequent initiatives like PDM, Polish Development Model, there is a whole program called Mindset Change. And unfortunately, that is the list and the program that will never be implemented, because the authors of it themselves need to be beneficiaries of the program. But they think it is another person's mindset change. The biggest mindset issue we are dealing with as a country is among the decision makers themselves. And because they did not design it as themselves being the beneficiaries, but the ones to cause other people's change. You can't be blind and you're the one leading the fellow blind people. Actually, they may be seeing better than you. Our leaders need to rethink their attitudes about food and agriculture in this country. Let me tell you, Kenya needs our maize. Sudan needs our maize. Rwanda needs our milk. Amazing needed in Zambia. How? You know, we are very unserious. A country of our nature, we are importing carrots, we are importing mangoes. Eh? And the recent African Union report actually confirmed that, that's the biennial review report of CADAP, confirmed that it was only Kenya in the region that was on track on ending hunger. A country that we are feeding, it is now feeding us. Onions, stupid things. Onions, mangoes. Then we import juices and grapes from Egypt that only benefits from the Nile. And the Nile hails from here, even if we steal water from it using cups. The Egyptians will not know. Agnes, and we are not doing that.
Give me a little hope, Agnes. Surely there must be something going right.
I cannot give you hope, Josephine, when we are seated in a privileged country where 34 million people suffered food insecurity. And then 10.4 million people severe food insecurity, meaning that they never had a meal yesterday, they don't have a meal today. How can I give you hope when we cannot do the basics?
How do you see our future, thinking through climate change and where we stand right now, how we are doing things?
The future lies in not discussing climate change in isolation, but relating climate change with the real lives that the people in Uganda live, but also the real economics of where we want the country at the macro level go. Let us not draw a line between the two. Let us align our investments to deal with climate change strategically.
What would you like us to take home from this conversation, just briefly, in terms of thinking about food security and thinking about climate change?
We need to know that the conversation on climate change globally is not a problem approach that we are dealing with it here. I don't know where else in Africa. Let me talk about Uganda. For us here, we talk about climate change and even get sad. We are losing the point. Elsewhere, climate change is big business. And if we wear the business lenses, all of us at macro and micro level, we are going to turn climate change into a very big opportunity. You know, when your thinking is in a business, is in a problem mode, you don't think anyway. Why did I even use the word thinking? You don't think. All what you need is sympathy. You cannot negotiate. You cannot put alternatives on the table. Because all what you need is a funeral. Everybody to come around you and you all weep. I'm here to tell you, climate change is a very big opportunity.
How do we start to see that opportunity?
Start by accepting that it is a very big opportunity. I cannot show you the opportunities when you yourself don't believe in it. First, believe and work on your mind that climate change is a very big opportunity.
So our problem is mindset change.
Because we love sympathy. We always want to look at problems like the problems of... Let me tell you, I'm a Christian. There is no problem that prevails above humanity. We are given the divine power. But we love the climate change. Let us open our minds and let us open our hearts, including our leaders, and start looking at climate change as a big opportunity. Then we are going to put big proposals on the table that are going to turn around how we deal with it. Otherwise, there is no business without challenges. And then lastly, my mother told me that even when she was in school, they were asked to define climate. And the definition was like change in weather, according to my mother. So she said, I hear people talking about climate change, but has climate ever been static? It will never be. So if we are waiting for it to stop, for us to come out of the mourning mode, and then we dictate which direction it takes, forget.
Thank you so much, Agnes. What I'm picking from that is people have been adapting long since these conversations started being as loud as they're
conversation.
So thank you so much, Agnes. I had missed engaging with you. I had forgotten how all of your experience in MDD comes to play when these conversations are that important to you.
Next time.
I hope you'll be back. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
Yeah.
There's so much to learn from listening to Agnes's perspective. That idea of climate change as an opportunity, it's quite challenging in some respects. But what's also struck me is her reflections on the issue of land, who owns it and who decides what it can be used for. Gender roles play out in all sorts of ways when it comes to the burdens that come with climate change, and that's something I'll be diving into in the next episode as I continue my own journey to understanding climate change and what it means for life in Uganda. My name is Josephine Karungi. See you next time, and if you want to reach out, climatetalkpod@gmail.com is where to write to us.